Esoterica Special Edition. Indie music. Unsigned music. Experimental music. Brought to you from the Esoterica program on WQNA-TV, the digital broadcast of the Springfield Community Broadcasters. SCBRadio.org.
Capital T, capital H, capital I-N-C, period, creates sound as a means of exploring the unknown, a way of processing the known in a new way, drawing on their love of early industrial music like Throbbing Gristle and Eisterzunde Neubauten. Think are interested in exploring sound and ideas from the subconscious brought to the foreground. Sonic resonances made of flesh and word mesh with metal and synthetics to create new experiences. Robert Hyman and Christopher Turner of Chicago's Think tackle the experimental questions on this week's podcast interview.
Question one, when did you first become aware of experimental sound and music? You started that one, Chris.
When did I become aware of...
When did you first become aware of experimental sound in music?
I don't know. The 80s? Maybe. Maybe 80s, 90s, early 90s. Listening to, like, out there punk rock, I guess, probably. Like, some of that stuff got noisy so and weird, so I think that's probably somewhere in between, like, the early 80s and mid-80s, probably. Getting into like crossover between punk rock and metal, and like somewhere in there is noisy stuff.
And what would you classify as like the first experimental thing that you heard?
Honestly, it was probably KMFDM's first album. If I think back, it's probably because that was a weird one, because like, they had like tape loops and like just weird pieces and.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it.
That's, I mean, other than weird rock, but that was probably one of the first records that was just like, wow, that's not really kind of normal music. Like, it's just different.
Yeah. Electronic elements, I guess, samples. And
Yeah. Because before then it was, you know, maybe Devo might have been one of the first bands that were kind of like, I heard some of their weird stuff and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's probably where it began for me. What about you, Rob?
I'm trying to think. Experimental sound and music. I want to say it was what I would consider that stuff is probably, yeah, it's definitely sort of like late 80s when I was in college. I think getting exposed to like ambient music, Brian Eno.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the Peter Gabriel's soundtrack for Passion, The Last Temptation of Christ. Really, I mean, it's more probably world music, but there's definitely a, you know, there's a world of sound in there, I guess. You know, there's a lot of sort of different takes on it. But yeah, I think that kind of tapped in. I mean, I had, you know, tapped into a few things prior to that, like Sonic Youth and Swans, quote unquote industrial, you know, that were things that I understood to be industrial that maybe weren't. But that was, I think, you know, that stuff was probably the first thing that I didn't necessarily interpret it as experimental, but thinking back on it, started to go that way, you know, tap into that.
That and the Disney Haunted House record.
Yeah.
If I had to trace it back, it would definitely be that record. It would definitely have sparked my interest in it.
Chipmunk Records, like, how the hell did they get his voice so high?
I would say even, maybe even some of that, like, you know, because that's probably the first stuff you hear that's, like, really weird, like, not normal. Like,
the, Star Wars story on vinyl. You know, the books on tape sort of thing, where it's like, beep, turn the page. I was like, wait, what are all those sound effects and stuff, you know?
Yeah, you have to take it back.
Sound to Star Wars.
Outside of music, you know. Definitely the Disney Hub record.
Everyone had that one, right?
Yeah.
When did you first begin your personal experiments?
Never.
Like what? Like self-mutation experiments or like
yeah,
what?
See, I've been growing a third arm. No. It had to be the early 80s. I think.
Really?
Like my brother and I dinked around with a recorder, I know. Like recording ourselves and that, like, you know, or like recording stuff off the radio or... Okay. You know, like,
but you like played with it?
Yeah, like we're just like stopping and recording over stuff, and like, you know, before we even really knew what it was, I would say,
right?
It was probably the early mid 80s.
And when did you get that? What did you say? It was a PIA modular thing or something? The radio show?
Paya. Yeah, Paya? My brother used to order Paya modular synths, build your own, like when they first started out. So he would have that. Like,
what was that, like mid-80s maybe?
He probably got that at like 82.
Wow.
Maybe. Really early. I know, I mean, like, if I remember, it's 82 or 83. Like, my brother had that kind of stuff coming in. So he, through it being in the house, it was like, okay, well. But it was mostly like just recording stuff outside or just moving tapes around. Because we used to do a lot of like compilation cassettes and stuff. So just through that, you would find those kind of things that to play with, like, what else are you going to do in rural Michigan?
That's funny. That actually makes me think of the, I don't know if you ever had any of those old, like, Radio Shack electronics kits.
I've seen them.
Where there was, like, a box, you know, and it had all these connections, and you could connect them with little wires, and, like, you could, you know, get the little Morse code thing to beep, 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 you know, buzzer and stuff like that. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I guess maybe, yeah, no, that it's maybe relevant. I don't know.
I think it is. I mean, just because it wasn't recorded or something.
Yeah.
Still just, experiment.
Yeah. But I think formally, like, you know, me actually composing music or whatever to put it on tape, you know, on a multi-track or, a, you know, four-track cassette or whatever was, yeah, that was probably like 87, 88. Again, like when I got into college and started playing in bands, and then got interested in recording, and then interested in, you know, composing, but not, you know, being a drummer and not having any sort of like ability to play melodic instruments per se. It was hard for me to necessarily like compose a song, so it was, you know, little simple keyboard melodies and sound effects and stuff, you know.
It still works though.
Put something together, but that, yeah, I mean, but that was definitely, you know, recording with the intent of writing stuff and documenting it, you know. So I would have to say that's mine, probably 87, 88, maybe.
Nice.
So yeah, you were definitely a lot younger.
only because we had a lot of time and a tape recorder.
I was probably busy watching some television. If you had to choose which camp your material would belong, would it be more the world of music or the world of sound? And I guess it's more in relation to what we do and think.
I think it's both. It's both depending on what we're working on and depending on the project.
That's true. I mean, we have some stuff that's more structurally, more songish, you know? And other stuff that are more just sort of experiments and sound, you know.
Yeah,
I agree. Just
But I don't think we realize that until after we're recording, we physically start mixing stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't really deliver that.
Well, I guess the early stuff, because that was all composed with the idea of we were going to be able to repeat it and rehearse it and perform it.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
So we had an idea of, writing songs that had at least some sort of structure, even if it was like a structured improv,
That's true. That's true.
And those would maybe be more considered more, songs or / music.
Now it's definitely in that. It's both. It doesn't really.
Yeah, it's funny, posed with that question. I don't think I ever thought of it as just sound, but yeah, I think it definitely can be just, the world of sound of like, certainly, both of us, the experiments that we do with the equipment that we use, is a lot, can often be, let's see what sort of sound this makes. Let me plug these things in and see, and we start playing with it and see what kind of sound I can make, and definitely being, being interested in the idea of an interesting sound, the way a sound, I know for me personally, like when I'm working on, melter material or just material on my own that's song oriented or something, I'm very driven by sound. Like, I'll respond to a sound. I can listen to like a drone or something like that. That's, to me just sort of says a ton, even though it's very, it could be very static and just, could just literally be a, just a droning tone or something. But it could be something about it that puts you into a headspace or puts, it just says something, and that's definitely the world of sound.
I think ours recently touches on and combines both, even in within the same album or song.
Sure.
Which I think is great. I think it's both, but it's also both of them at the same time, or can be.
Yeah.
I think that's
yeah. And like special. I said, I think other than maybe some of that early stuff, we haven't done as much in the last few years that's been
song structure oriented.
We've edited things into more, like things that had beats and so forth that, maybe seem to have a little more alluded to some sort of structure, but yeah, we haven't really intentionally written anything in a long time where it was like, oh, let's program a bunch of beats and let's program parts and stuff, even a few things, I guess, that we've done where there's rhythmic stuff in there. It's sort of rhythmic for the sake of having some sort of pulse and having some sort of tempo, but not so much, being a foundation for a song or something on top of,
Yeah, I think that's a good, good way to look at it.
So, yeah, I guess, in the grand scheme of thing, it's probably, it's very much the world of sound as much as the world of music, if not so, more so leaning towards the world of sound, just experimenting with sound.
I think we pull the music from sound, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because some of the stuff we record is all, it's all sound, but then, we find melodies and songs within that stuff, working on it.
Right, or we find the things that seem to have
music.
Seem to have some sort of weight or something, some sort of intent to them, And, because, we can, we can sit and generate sound for hours and only find, 20 minutes of it that seems valid, or seems interesting enough, to put together as like, oh, this is something someone should hear, other than just, oh, this is us making noise for 3 hours,
Very true.
How do you know if ever an experiment was a success? I mean, I think I think we definitely know. I mean, we know all the time. That's why we, you know, we go back and listen to stuff that we create and go, oh, that's cool. Let's do something with that. You know, I guess it's,
to me, I think, yeah, I think it's just, it's,
it, and I guess quantifying a success is just being, you know, oh, that seems worthy of someone listening to other than us.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's, yeah, to me, it's as if everything that we've done up to the point of releasing that if someone else can get the concept and understand the ideas or just enjoy it, then it's successful. But not, you know.
Mm.
But then there's beautiful failures too out of experimentation that just happen to work. And, you know, like I don't know. That's an interesting question, but it's.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to clarify what you consider, how you define success. But
I guess, yeah, if
I mean, I think we pretty much succeed all the time.
Yeah, I mean, if you're experimenting just to get an emotion out of something or someone, to me, that's, if you can get that, then that's, I think that's one side of it. And then if you're experimenting with just ideas and concepts, that it's that's the other side of it. You know, there's, I think, to me, there's two parts of that.
Mm.
And I think we do a really good job of working with the material to get something that's successful, or as successful as we can get it, I guess.
I think, you
know, what's the point of putting out an experiment that doesn't work, you know, to the public?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, with what you and I do, you know, we both work independently. Like, yeah. You know, you can sit and work on your stuff. And you know, maybe you create something that's, you know, okay, that's interesting, but it's sort of, you know, you're in your own bubble. Or I might do the same thing. I might be like, you know, playing with the modular and trying to explore this concept of, you know,
yeah, that's true.
How to patch these two things together and see what happens when I do, you know.
It's like that micro experimenting that goes on, which I think helps us refine it and get better results.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's part of sort of educating or you know, getting more proficient with the equipment that you use, understanding when I patch this thing into that, here's some of the sounds that I can get out of that, you know. So yeah, that can inform future things when you're like, okay, I want to do something like this or that. I can, you know, here's the tools I can use to get me there, you know. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think for both of us, you know, we have stuff all the time that maybe we're just playing around with no intent whatsoever to even record it, let alone, you know, release it or whatever. It's just
sort of,
we're just experimenting on our own. But I think I think what we find, the power of collaborating is as soon as, you know, you create something and someone responds to that and adds something to it, all of a sudden there's value there that's created. There's some sort of dialogue, you know. There's communication between us that's, you know, musical in nature or sound in nature, but all of a sudden has validity. Because it's not just you, or like, you know, I can create something that I think is really cool, but I may not, you know, I don't know if anybody else would think it's cool, you know.
Yeah.
But I think if you collaborate, then all of a sudden, oh, you know, I had no idea you were going to do something like that, or, you know, that takes it in a new direction, and that's interesting.
Yeah, I think the collaborating helps kind of weed out the more failed mistakes. Because it's like if you're working on something and I'm working on something before we get together and put them together, my side of it or your side of it might be weaker, not exactly what you expected as in the experiment. So bringing that together, you know, there's all, like you said, there's times where we record stuff that isn't always usable or we just don't want to use it.
Right.
And I think the more you collaborate and the more you minimize those experiments coming together that don't work, so then your ultimate end goal is having expanded with it is successful more often. Right. No. The percentage is pushed, right. I think. Because there's definitely been times where I've been like working on something and try to bring it in and play with something that you've been working with and it just doesn't always click.
Yeah.
So then you just kind of like, throw it out and
do
something different. So I think, it's a way of weeding out.
I mean, I guess
for sure.
How do you know? It's just instinct. You just listen to it, you know. And I
think you feel there's a certain satisfaction you get from finishing something. And
we seem to know a lot, like even while we're doing it, like
we try.
Oh, that was good, you know. That it was like, there was, you know, like I said, we can jam for an hour and record it and go, there was some good stuff in there, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'm always intrigued. I'm always really. Really, really surprised and intrigued by the idea of like going back and listening to it, you know, even the next day or a couple of weeks, and just being like, I don't remember any of this, you know, and throw the tracks up and like, you know, without even looking at it, being like, I don't know who's making which sound, you know, like I don't remember this. It that's, you know,
or I did this, I did that. That was me. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like what the hell was I thinking? You know,
that's so true.
Or, what, you know, I didn't, you know, maybe I didn't register that, you know, you did something really cool there that, you know, I didn't pick up on at the time or whatever. Mm. So there's huge value in going back and listening to it afterwards, because I find it definitely hard to, depending on how well prepared I am, to be completely aware in the moment of what I'm doing and what you're doing and what we're creating, you know.
It just clicks. I think when you know it's a success, when you look at the person you're working with and you just kind of go, Yeah.
We've had a few things like that.
Yeah, that's the sound, or that's what we're looking for.
We did a few jams that were just like literally, we took that stereo recording or just, you know, like minimal editing or anything, just like, oh man, that was amazing. Like where the hell did that come from?
And
how did we channel that? That was just, you know, outstanding. And it was like, thank God I've got it recorded and we're just going to, you know, EQ it and it's done. You know,
it's a roll of the dice, but
yeah,
hopefully you can get dice that are fixed for you and roll you good stuff all the time.
Yeah. How did you start collaborating? Well, I know how we met. You know, we met in what? 2001?
Was it?
2001, 2002?
Somewhere in there. Yeah.
You know, when I was working at Invisible.
I was like, you like to do weird music. I like to do weird music. Yeah. You have a space to rehearse. I have a space to rehearse.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
All right. It was that simple.
The first stuff we did, yeah, that was over in your artist in residence space,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, oh, we like these bands. I like these bands. Like, let's get together. And
yeah. So it was what, like 2001, 2002. Then we met, you know, through Invisible Underground Inc. Mm-hmm. You know, working at Martin, you came in to intern, and then from that, it's, you know, well, 95% of the people that probably get involved are musicians to begin with, right?
Like, true. Yeah.
You're not going to intern at a label if you're not a musician or something, probably. But but yeah, just talking from that, and obviously, you know, I think I had a friendship from that, but then yeah, I think we quickly started collaborating.
Oh, it's like, yeah, oh, you do music. Oh, yeah. Oh, you start with the music. Like, oh, I like this band or this band. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, you're a musician. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And then, well, let's get together and jam, man, and see what happens. And like,
yeah, you know. Yeah, because I remember those were like long days because, you know, I had that whole like percussion rig that I had to like load it all up. Because
it was that big stand.
Yeah, I had that like drum rack that, but it was all like, you know, like even some of the crap that's still hanging in this room here, like, you know, sheets of metal and just pieces of things. But I had it like hanging, you know, on that rack and all that, and had some acoustic drums involved too, but in electronics. But yeah, that whole thing was a monstrosity to put together. But what do we, I think you could like get that room for what, like 5 hours or something? So it was like,
yeah, it was like at least two or three at a time.
Load up, set up, you know. Do all that stuff and then be like, okay, what are we doing? Making sound for a couple hours. And
some of that stuff was good.
I know I've got recordings of it, but I don't think I've listened to that in forever.
There's some good songs on there, for sure. There's a lot of bad songs, too.
And then tear it all down, load it up, and take it home, you know. You were lucky. You just had to go up the elevator and go home.
But still.
Yeah, just around for me as a drummer, it was a lot of... Because I think I probably brought my PA as well.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh my God, you know. I think I was, you know, what, 20 years younger, so I could do it then. But
so, you know, early 2000s, like...
Yeah. And then, you know, that was just kind of a thing. It never really, I mean, we did it for what, like a few months, and that was that. And then we started the thing with Nathan and Ivan, the four of us, you know, which was attempting to be more of a band with more structured songs and whatnot.
I don't think I've ever heard much of that.
I've got some of it. Yeah. Yeah.
But so it's been a while.
And then you and I did the thing together. That was like the first time. After that project latch. Fell apart, yeah, that I think, latch. Yeah, that again was kind of short-lived. But you and I did it for a few months or whatever, and came up with a few tracks, you know.
And then we didn't do music, and then we did do more music, and then we didn't. You know.
but we totally like stopped. I mean, that was probably what, 2003, 2004. Yeah, I know it was that time because then. You know, when I moved away from Chicago and then came back, I don't think you and I did anything for like
a while.
10 years.
Maybe.
For some dumb reason, but we hadn't, you know.
Life got like,
it was just,
life got
tough. Doing other things life and whatever tough. and and then I remember that, like, I don't remember exactly where I was, but I remember having that conversation with Jen, and it just like the light bulb just went on. I'm like, why am I not working with Chris? Why am I not making music with Chris?
Yeah, you probably reached out to me.
Yeah.
After you moved
and back. I think it was literally probably that same day or the next day I just like texted you or something. It's like, we need to start collaborating again, you know? Yeah. So I just realized, you know, I missed it. And
36 gold albums later.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
50 million Think fans later, we've got gold lapel suits, and here we are.
They're Filipino records, but they're gold, so it counts. It counts in America for at least one, something like that.
What can you say about the idea of making the art and running a label at the same time?
Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, I know that's
everyone says that.
Alluding to Lens Records, but you know, so I started doing that. Well, originally I started doing it in like 99. I think that was the first thing I did, Reptilica record.
Nice.
And then, you know, went to work with Martin, and then I stopped doing it during that time. And then after that, like what, 2005, I think, when I came back to Chicago, that's when I sort of picked it up again, because I wasn't working with Martin. And then obviously knew you and Ivan and Nathan and Robin and a few other people, and it was like, okay, everyone was kind of doing their music and doing their thing, and it was like, well, let me do the label thing to help everyone promote, you know. And it was definitely fun to do, but then I kind of, over the years, I guess, what, then until around 2012, honestly, is like the last time I've done any sort of official release. And you know, handful of reasons of why I stopped doing it. You know, personal reasons, financial reasons. I think the biggest one, though, was like, you know, I found myself spending a lot of time promoting other people's music.
I could see that.
Which I enjoyed. I loved, you know, the people I was working with and the music I was involved with and helping to release and promote. But I wasn't really making. Well, I guess I was playing in Mr. Russia with Ivan, but other than that, I wasn't making any music on my own. And I just kind of got to the point of like, why am I spending all this time and effort promoting other people's music? Why don't I make my own? You know, I kind of became apparent to me that, you know, getting older and whatnot, I'm like, hey, you know, I've only got so much time left. I think I should be making my own music and doing that versus, you know, other people's stuff. So yeah, I think, you know, 2012 was the last official thing that came out on Lens, and then you know, I guess I kind of had the intention of doing it more, like with our stuff, even though at this point we don't have any physical product. If we ever did some sort of physical product, I'd, you know, if it was cool with both of us, I'd just put the name on it just to give it a home, you know. Yeah. Put it out into the world. But
mini discs, we're bringing them back.
Yeah. But you say about the idea of making the art and running label. Yeah, I think, well, it, yeah, it's, if anything, you know, I guess some people can do both, but yeah, that was, like you said, that's probably the reason I don't do the label so much anymore, is because I just, I just don't have time, you know. And the way I look at it now, I don't even have enough time to make the music I want to make, so I definitely don't have time to run a label, you know, because then I'd make even less music, so.
I know it's tough. Like, I spend, for my stuff, I spend almost, depending on what it is, almost the same amount of time doing artwork as for recording sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get them in line to make sure that I'm happy with what they're doing. So it is time consuming. It's like, it's really hard to like, it's probably gotten easier now because of digital, so you don't have to do, you know, cards and booklets and covers, and you know, you can just do one flat cover or whatever, so it's a lot easier and quicker, but
yeah, but
it's like time consuming.
Yeah, but even like the stuff, a couple of the Think releases you've done where, you know, you did a whole suite of photos and or what, images and whatnot, you know, like, you know, some people probably don't even realize that, even if they've got the release, that like, you know, there's an album cover, but then there's actually a cover for each song, you know?
And some of those take a few, so it's a challenge. Like, you have to get both sides, you have to get the balance between it. So that's why I don't know, graphic design, digital stuff's a lot easier than old school sending it off, but it's still a balance you have to figure out. I mean,
Yeah, I guess it could be maybe like, well, the tools are easy, right? Yeah. You've got you know, a phone or whatever, you can take good photographs and then you can edit, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can get a finished result faster.
Right.
Just means you're more self-contained, you have all the tools, you
know. Yeah, if you're doing it for five or six bands across the board, I mean, that's where do you find the hours in the day to do all of that? Especially if you're one or two people on a late, you know, running the label. So it's like,
yeah,
it's understandable why you don't do a lot of lens stuff anymore, because it's, you just wouldn't get any sleep.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't. I mean, yeah. If you had to be any kind of productive between your paying gig and artistic stuff, it's, you wouldn't get any sleep at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
yeah, like I said, it was, you know, personal reasons. Like at the time, you know, when I started the label, I had a more lucrative job and I had a lot more disposable income. Mm-hmm. And that kind of came to an end. And, yeah, you know, personal stuff like having a family, having kids. It was like, I don't have time to do this stuff anymore. And it was, yeah, and like, why not kickstart it again? It's like, yeah, no, I didn't, you know, again, don't have endless supply of time and energy. So it's like, yeah, I'd rather just spend it making my own music. And, you know, I've got two musical projects that I love doing, so that keeps me busy.
Totally.
Like I said, I can't. I'd love to create more music with both of those entities, so it's sort of, I spend all my time there.
Yeah. So. Way easier.